So yeah, so hello, I'm Wesley Walker. This is his podcast, Race, Sports, and Politics. Today I have a very, very special guest, Dr. Demetrius Richmond. I'm going to let him introduce himself and tell us about his background. So if you could go ahead and get into it.
Well, okay, sure. Hello, greetings to all of the fans of this amazing podcast. I'm Demetrius Richmond. Originally from Memphis, Tennessee. I consider myself a higher education expert, educator, and administrator. I've been working in higher ed for the last 15 plus years as an administrator and an instructor. And so in higher ed was communication. Well, I've taught communication courses for the last 15 plus years, whether that's public speaking, interpersonal communication, intercultural communication. And I've also taught in graduate programs and served on dissertation committees. I also teach a leadership course, and it's called Leadership in the African American Community. And so I've just, you know, I've been committed to just really helping young people find their genius and become change agents to get rid of the status quo. And I'm also just committed to the African American experience. Being a son of the South, I have some experiences, and I've always just tried to stay in tune with who we are, what we do, why we are, and how what we do impacts the greater society. So I'm just honored to be here, and I'll stop there for now.
Well, thank you so much for that. So, and for that introduction, and so for this one, I'm trying to do kind of two segments, and the first segment I want to get into is you did a really good job of talking about the Black experience and Black people in America. And we both are children of the Deep South. So, we met in the University of Arkansas where we both went to school. So we both had that experience, which is, I believe, definitely a unique one. Mm-hmm. But the first thing I want to get into is when you say Black people, and we're talking about Black people in America, one thing that I hope that we can start introducing into the conversation, you let me know what you think. When it comes to Black people in America, I think the diversity among Black people is kind of overlooked sometimes. We have affluent Black people, we have middle-class Black people, working-class Black people, and poor Black people that may live in the inner city or what we might call the hood or the ghetto, right? So when you're talking about Black people, are you talking about all types, specific types? Can you kind of expound on that?
Okay, I think it's a great perspective. I think it's important for us to kind of operationalize what we're talking about. Because, you know, this is the proverbial question, what is Black?
Right. Right.
And, exactly. And can it ever be completely defined? So I take it from a couple of spaces. The first space is, I think there are some shared histories, experiences related to the descendants of chattel slavery in the United States. You know, African Americans. And so when I think about the Black experience, I'm talking about that specific experience for Black people in America who are descended from chattel slavery. So like myself, people from the Black South, okay, etc., whatever. But I also...
So to you, the current socioeconomic status is not really your main concern?
Well, it's all of that. It's all of that.
Okay.
I'm getting to that. So I just think it's important now to identify that, because I think the Black experience is a lot wider when you put the global perspective on it. And, you know, we have a huge increase of Black immigrants in this country now who are making waves and doing their thing. And I think there are some similarities, and I consider them as my brothers and sisters too. But I do think there is a specific experience related to us descendants of chattel slavery in America. But I do, and so I can. That I consider Black all of that, but I'd like to just operationalize when I'm talking about our experience, and that means, you know, all socioeconomic statuses as well. But I do think it's important for us. It's hard to say what all of these criteria make you Black,
right?
I think Black is an ever evolving thing. I put it like this. If you are Black on earth, living any type of lived experience, that is the Black experience.
Oh, wow. It's that broad for you.
In general. Wow, in general. Okay. But when I'm having conversations, I like to just specify what I'm talking about, my people here in America right now, whatever. So I think it's important to identify all of that.
I got you. And quick question. So I don't remember if you emphasize this enough in your introduction. You do have a doctorate in higher education.
Right? Yes. Yes. I have a...
With your specialty would be, what was your dissertation about?
Yeah, so I got my PhD at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. Go Vols. and I actually did my dissertation research on African-American cultural centers at predominantly white institutions. And I did a qualitative study on the history of those centers and how their path transitioned in modern day society on college campuses. Yeah.
Okay. And in your studies, how much intersection was there between politics in America and the things that you were studying when you were finishing out your PhD? Because the reason I asked is because I wanted to get your opinion about what type of political, I guess, what policies, what are the things that you believe that we should be striving for? We should be looking at our representatives to give for us. Like, what type of policies do you think will best benefit Black people here in America?
Okay. Wow, there's so much I could say about this.
Just give me your number one or number two things that you think are most important that we should be putting pressure on our representatives to put in place.
Well, I think the responsibility, the pendulum swings in all directions. I think we as a community have to hold ourselves accountable. I think we have to also make it a priority to be civically engaged and understand what that means as an American citizen. And it's not just vote for Obama and SD, and if he don't win, I'm gonna disengage. I think we have to educate ourselves on what does it mean to be a part of this political system and to be engaged in it as a community, at the city level, at the state level, at our community level, level. And so I think we have to do some work also to make sure that we are knowledgeable enough about how we can engage this political system. That's number one. Then number two, I think we do have to identify our top 10 issues or priorities that we can engage our political leaders on. I think a lot of times with us, we haven't done the work ourselves, and then we expect from others. So I always ask, you know, people say, well, Obama didn't do nothing for Black people. Well, what did you demand of him? What did you ask of him? What agenda did you set before him as a community?
I hear that a lot too. That's a really good retort.
I think there are some issues that we can push forward, police brutality and mass incarceration. Mm. And I'm really big on education. I think education
issue I'm in the same boat now.
Is a primary priority for me, whether it's K-12 or higher ed. I think we have to really push that at the forefront in terms of our schools and how they're funded. So I think it's a lot of issues we can push forward. But if we haven't done the work on our end, you know, I think that can limit how we navigate this political system.
And I get exactly what you're saying. And that's one reason I really like Kamala Harris, by the way, because she was going to increase HBCU funding like massively, by the way. I just wanted to throw that
out
there.
You know, you and I, we disagree often and we agree often. And
we do.
Even Kamala Harris was one of those areas where we agree fundamentally from top to bottom.
Yeah.
I've been Team Kamala from the beginning, so yeah.
I feel like our people let us down on that one. But you know, that's a good, I don't even mean to do that, but that's a good transition, a good segue to the second topic. You know, I was hoping to do about 15 or 20 minutes for this thing, and I think that we're right on track for that.
Okay.
So transitioning to the second topic, right? Black solidarity. Because that's something that we talk about a lot. And it sounds great, right? Fight the power, put the fist up, you know, Black power, whatever you want to say. We all need to stick together. But quite frankly, in my opinion, in my experiences, I don't think we do that as much as we claim that we want to and claim that we should. Mm-hmm. So based on your background, you basically being a subject matter expert and I think African-American history, Black history in general, what would you say is the definition of Black solidarity? What does that mean to you?
Okay, well, first, let me just say, I don't know if I'm an expert. I just, you know, try to read and understand as much as possible and try to exchange information. I'm always
okay, we get it. You humble. You kind of.
I'm always learning, is what I'm saying.
I got you.
And so for me, when I think about Black solidarity, I see it as a mindset and a behavior where you think Black first.
Mm.
Think across.
I'm going to write that down.
Across life realms. So whether that's institutionally, economically, spiritually, or whatever, I think it is a mindset and a life perspective with Black first, with the intent of investing in, improving in, expanding, and moving forward. So when I think of Black solidarity, all of that comes to me. And so there are a myriad of things that you can do across life spectrums to enact Black solidarity.
Okay, hold that thought, because that's going to be a question I was going to ask. What action should we take to increase or improve Black solidarity? Okay. But before I ask you that question, I would like to ask you, in America, when it comes to Black solidarity, are there areas where you think we're pretty strong, we're good at showing that? And are there areas that we are weak or need to improve?
I think it's both and. I think, and another question that we can get to also is why. I think the why is very important. But first, I will say, I think there's a lot of Black solidarity evident in our experience here. I mean, if you mean contemporarily, like in 2020?
Yeah, just nowadays.
Yeah, I think so. I believe there is a desire for us to unite and support each other and come together in music and business. I think there's a lot of efforts. And I think it depends on where you are in life and where you are in your community. I remember when I was in my PhD program, you see all of the news on Black-on-Black crime and police brutality. Yeah. You know, single parent households and just all of the negative data that you would see on a general day. And I remember thinking like, oh, wow. I'm going to be honest. I was like, Black people ain't shit. We ain't doing shit.
I've been through those emotions as well. I'm glad you said that, because I've been through those emotions as well, especially when you start studying the issues and you really start looking at data and like seeing, we really is acting crazy.
Yeah, and on, I thought, man? About like even my first generation low income household in Memphis. I mean, all that stuff just bubbled up, and I was getting a little jaded and disillusioned with my people. And I remember my chapter brother, shout out to the Alphas. He worked on Capitol Hill in Washington D.C. And he invited me to the Congressional Black Caucus National Conference, which is every year. But I was like, what is this? He was like, bro, you need to come. And so he basically he got me this, they call it a Young Professionals Track, where you go to this conference. And I had never gone. And I will tell you, Wesley, that conference shifted my entire perspective on Black leadership, who's out there doing what. And I left so inspired and so empowered. And it really shifted my perspective. It went from a fixed mindset to Black people ain't doing this, so we ain't shit, to a growth mindset that said a lot of us out here doing a lot of great things, trying to unite us and invest in our progress. We just have to be in tune with it. And the biggest lesson I got from going, and I still go every year, was we are the leadership that we're waiting on. It's like we keep looking for all these other people, this great leader like MLK to lead us to the promised land. When in actuality, Wesley, it's your time, it's my time, it is our time to step up and lead ourselves. And so that's when I really began to see, like, there's a lot of black solidarity, man. Because I was seeing, like, senators, congresspeople, you know, superintendents of K-12 systems. You know, we had a young professionals mixer, and they paired up with all these seasoned professionals. And the person I was with was, like, the chief operations officer for, like, Marriott Hotels. A black man, right? And it just showed me that, you know, we have to kind of step back and see the bigger picture. And if you step back, you'll be like, oh, wow. There are a lot of black people out here doing a lot of great things. And there are efforts for us to be unified. We just have to tap into it and then do our part where we are.
Yeah, that make a lot of sense. So we need to tap into it and do it according to what we need to be doing. So would you say that's the biggest action we should take, is kind of step up and understand that we are the change that we look for?
I think there are a couple of initial steps. The initial
steps be?
Step is having a sense of cultural awareness and identity. And having a
what do you mean by that?
Of self, who am I? Why am I? How did I get here? And what is the community that came before me that got me here? And how do I fit into that lived experience? A lot of us, we don't know who we are. We don't know our history. We don't know our cultural history. We don't know our family history. A lot of times, we're just kind of just roaming the earth. While listening to hip hop, but we really have. It took me a minute to get there, and I remember when I was in Arkansas in my master's program, my brother and I got pulled over by the police. We were almost in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and the police officer pulled a gun on us for no reason while we were sitting in our car, and. Like, basically, like, threatened to shoot us, went through our car for no reason, went through our suitcases. And then after all of that, we're just like, oh, well, you can leave now. That left me so despondent, so defeated, so disillusioned. And it was like that moment really kind of woke up my consciousness. And I'm thinking, like, there's something more to this world that I'm not getting. Like, why would that happen to me? Like, I don't understand it. Like, me being a black man in this environment, there's something else that I'm missing. And it just pushed me into this whole phase of becoming more aware of who I am and black history and all of this stuff. And so I think once you have the presence of mind to understand who you are and where you come from, that's the first step. And a lot of us don't know who we are. We don't.
That's so true. That's so true. I just did my ancestry DNA test a year ago.
Nice.
I think that's one big way you can kind of have some sense of identity, and the results came back that I'm like 85% Ghanaian.
Wow.
From Ghana
or something like that.
So that's like a big, like you said, that's a really big identity thing. It's like, oh
wow, that is amazing.
I'm from Ghana. My people are from Ghana. That's where I'm from, you know. So now I have that connection. If I ever decide to visit the continent, right, the motherland, and guess where I'm going? I'm gonna go to Ghana and say, "Hey, what's up with it?" You know, I might be my doppelganger. You never know. I bet there's a whole bunch of them walking around over there look just like.
Ooh, that's amazing, man. That is absolutely amazing. And I'm gonna make it a little bit more complex for you. I think. Well, I'll tell you for me. I did the same thing, and I did an ancestry test, and I found out that I had ancestry in Togo. Which is like these two smaller countries right next to like Nigeria. I've always been this African American who wanted to connect to the continent and find out where I came from, because we more than slaves and all of this stuff. And I remember the lesson for me was I didn't have a sense of self, even with the connection to my history here in this country. I was so caught up in trying to find my identity and connection to Africa that I was overlooking all of the greatness that my family endured as slaves and sharecroppers in this country. You know, when I thought about that, there was shame. You know, it was shame. I don't want to talk about that. The slavery shit. It's embarrassing. We porch monkeys. And there was like some unspoken shame that I think a lot of us attached to that experience. And we don't see it as triumph. And it wasn't until I realized, like, I found out when I did my research with my connections to Benin and Togo, I found out in a lot of research that, you know, a lot of them brazenly sold Black people into slavery. And it broke my heart. And it just made me understand, like, you know, I had to embrace my lived experience right here in this country as well, and embrace the tragedies and the triumph of coming from chattel slavery. And you know,
man, it's funny, it's crazy you say that, because I wasn't doing research, but I watched like a 6-part documentary by Dr. I think his name was Dr. Henry
Louis Gates.
Henry Louis Gates. Did you see that?
I love it, man.
Yeah, I watched that, and basically the same revelation that you had, I had from watching that.
Is it called Many Rivers to Cross?
I believe that is it. It's like 6 parts,
yeah.
An hour long.
I make my students watch it in my Black leadership class. Yeah.
Yes, and so that revelation came to me through watching that. Like, wait a minute, like you said, they brazenly did kind of sell us away, and I'm like, man. We need to talk about this. Like, if I go back over there, I'm gonna be like, "Hey, man, I know the Europeans brought us over and they treated us terrible. I'm not defending them,
but y'all what did was your role, right?
What was your role in this? What was going on there? Because that don't seem right. You know, what I'm
saying? But you see, like, it's just so much that we don't know that shapes our experience today. Yeah. So that's why I say, like, the first step is really learning your history and learning who you are, and then once you have that. Once you have that, it builds confidence, and then you can then look at, okay, what are my next steps to move forward? That probably is not the answer you want to hear, but
no, it's exactly what I wanted to hear, and you know, it's really good information and good, very educational. And so, and that being said, that brings us to the final thing we'll talk about before we get off here. And we've had some really good, deep, heavy conversation. This final thing we're going to talk about is be a little bit more lighthearted, but it's kind of along the same lines. And I'll let you know beforehand what's coming, so you're not going to be surprised. We've talked about this a lot, right? Tyler Perry movies, right? We talk about Black solidarity. We're talking about sticking up for each other, right? We're talking about we need to support each other, right? So, if my recollection serves me correct, Tyler Perry is now the, I don't know if he's a sole owner, but he's at minimum the vast majority owner of his own studios, right? Mm-hmm. He has the capability to create, produce, hire people, make movies. Make movies where he hires a lot of Black people. And he has a deal with Netflix where he's putting those same Black people on Netflix and getting them airtime and getting them. It's a great thing for Black people. So you tell me, we should all be excited about watching and supporting that movie, right? Or am I right? What do you think about that?
What do you got to say? I don't know who's listening, fans, but you know, me and what
the three people that are listening.
Me and Wes have gone back and forth over this, and so I'll say this. Tyler Perry is connected to a larger dynamic that I see in our community. And I'm going to say this.
Wait, but before you, so tell people what you
think.
I'm not a fan.
I used to be a huge fan. We had every Madea play on DVD that we bought on the street corner at the barbershop. We loved it. But it just, there was no progression. And I have not been a fan for a while because I think there is this implicit expectation in the African American community that accept mediocrity. And most times Black is mediocre. So just accept it. Right. So, you know, when we think about our Black institutions, go to a Black restaurant, you know, they ain't got no menu. They don't know how to communicate. It takes forever. It's all of these issues. And you know, for the most part, we just kind of deal with, you know, I'm supporting my people. We just got to deal with it. But I just feel like we have to demand excellence also. And I feel like a lot of people don't want to demand excellence, so they just accept the status quo. And I think Tyler Perry is benefiting off of that. And he yes. has figured out that I can do the least and still get the most from my people. And I don't agree with that.
Mm. Okay. So this is what I would say. I mean, we like you said, we've said this back and forth a lot. But just for the sake of this podcast, we'll say it again, right? So for you look at it as demanding excellence, right? So I look at it as, for lack of a better way to say it, I feel like we should give each other yes. more of a break than we would give somebody else. Because you're looking at Tyler, you're comparing Tyler Perry movies maybe to a movie that won an Oscar, right? But Tyler Perry is a black man that owns a movie studio compared to, I don't know, Paramount or Disney or whoever, a multi-billion dollar corporation that's been in control of Hollywood for hundreds of years. The movies that you're comparing Tyler Perry movies to have $50-100 million mm-hmm. budget, and God knows how low his budget is. So it's like when you demand excellence to the same level as a Hollywood film that's maybe Oscar worthy or approaching that, you're not really comparing apples to apples. You have to look at it, and this goes to going to a black restaurant too. You know, if you go to a black restaurant, what are the odds that this person that owns a restaurant got the restaurant passed down to them from their grandfather? We weren't allowed to own that. We just not being allowed to own restaurants. So this is the first iteration. So obviously he's not going to be on point as a business owner or as a restaurant owner as the guy that had a franchise passed down to him from his grandfather to his father to him. You know, they didn't get the guidance. This guy might have got a home equity mm-hmm. loan against his house mm-hmm. just to be able to buy the place. Mm-hmm. It didn't get handed to him. So when you go into that black restaurant and the service is not quite great, they don't really know how to do this, and it's not that good.
After 10 years, I feel like we should
give each other a break instead of demanding the same excellence as somebody.
After 10 years, you don't know how to serve people. After 10 years, you don't know how to have enough food yes. on Sunday. After 10 years, you can't grow and expand. You can't master the basic foundational things after a 10-year lived experience. Really?
Yeah, because it's a business. And most businesses fail, first off. And you can learn and you can progress, but that doesn't mean you're going to learn and progress at the same level that somebody that's been around for 100 years has been there. I mean, think about how far back Century, what's the biggest movie?
I don't know the name.
Paramount, Fox 21, whatever it's called. Think about how long they've been around, since like the 20s and 30s. And they're backed by hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. Tyler Perry, how long has he owned a movie?
Well, I can tell you, I have been supporting Tyler at least 2 decades. Buying DVDs. You know, I think I went to one play. Having meetups and going to the movie theater with other black professionals and making it a lived experience. Like, we have supported this man. And there's only so many times I want to see a movie about a disenfranchised single black woman who lets a black dude treat her like crap. It's like you're asking me to continue watching the same monotonous stuff over and over again. And if I choose not to, I'm betraying my community. I don't think that's a good correlation. Like,
okay, I think betraying is strong, but I think what you maybe not be considering is that we have to do it. I believe that we should continue to support this because he's the first one. He's the foundation. So guess what? Maybe Tyler Perry is going to go his whole career making movies like this that you just don't like. But guess what? He might open a door for the next person. The next black person is going to come along that may do Oscar-worthy movies can be so we have to support the structure that's in place that will give us the opportunity so that the next person may come along and be like you. He's like, look, I'm going to do some better stuff than this. I ain't going to just make Madea movies over and over. But if we don't continue to support the structure that's in place because we don't like Madea movies, those opportunities might not
well,
be
well. So this actually is a good example of how far does black solidarity extend, right?
Yes, right. That's what we're talking about. Yeah, exactly.
So for me, example. It's kind of like, I'll give you an example. You know, that's like me saying, you know, Miss Shirley only know how to cook chitlins. She opened up a restaurant.
Right.
And all she cooked right. is chitlins. And that's all she can cook forever. She should never learn how to cook anything right. else. And if you could just only accept chitlins from restaurants. No.
Okay.
If she wants to keep cooking chitlins, that's fine. But I'm going to go support another black person who can cook chitlins and chitlin souffle or chitlin crab, chitlin cake, whatever. I think it's important for us to support other black businesses and not just, you know, accept this one-dimensional, limited way of being and doing. Like, I can't do that.
But that's the thing. We don't have the luxury of picking. We don't have the I'm gonna go support the other black man that owns a $500 million.
There are other great black filmmakers like Ava DuVernay.
I didn't ask filmmakers. I said
there are other people. The other black person that owns a but I'm talking about there are other black people doing things in his field that we can still support.
But they don't have the resources that he has. The resource is all about resources to me. You can be the best filmmaker in the world, but if you don't have resources, what are you
doing? They're providing opportunities. Are you giving other people? Yes, they are.
Not as much. Oh, yeah, they are. But I'm saying
maybe you have a grant of all that he has and what he does.
I just like to look at.
He has a new television studio. Sure, that's. I'm happy for him. I applaud him. He's making strides. Sure, that's good stuff.
Just not good enough for you. He not progressing fast enough.
How many black people in this country?
About 14 million. There's enough
for us to support a plethora of black businesses. And it's like, why we always get to have just one? And we got to break our back to just support this one effort. And can't nobody else have nothing. Can't nobody else do nothing. No, we can support. He can still have his population. And then I could do my Spike Lee and my Ava DuVernay or whatever. And they all can thrive and be okay. Why should I be forced to eat chitlins when I'm tired of eating it?
Because eventually Miss Shirley's daughter is going to take over the business. And then she's going to introduce salmon. She gonna have some chicken fried steaks.
I'll come back over there.
But if you don't stick with it, it won't.
He's okay. He's a millionaire. He is fine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's fine. Maybe Tyler Perry is a bad example for that point because he will be fine. He will be fine. But I guess it's the mentality I'm speaking to. That if it's a small up and coming guy and we have that mentality.
No,
he don't have that luxury.
I support the up and coming.
You know what I mean?
You know, I will, but I'm gonna be like, look, bro, can we get a menu in this restaurant? What's the problem?
It's funny you say that. There was a black restaurant in my neighborhood. I think they actually closed down, and they literally did not have a menu. I walked in there, and it was not the best experience. But you know what?
I'm going to ask for better experiences when I go. And a lot of times our businesses really kind of stay at the status quo because we don't demand more. You know, we don't. We'll go squeeze up in a little chicken shack and be treated like crap. And then when it's black, we're just going to take it. I'm like, can I speak to the manager? What's the problem, brother? How can I help? What's going on? And most times they respond fairly positively to it. So I guess part of it is on us too.
It is. Well, I guess I was hoping I could convince you on the podcast. I guess that didn't work out.
Do you like Ava DuVernay's work?
I'm not too familiar
with a lot of it. You watch Queen Sugar on Oprah Winfrey's network. It is amazing. The guy that did Moonlight has a show on Oprah Winfrey's network. It's called David Makes Man. Another amazing piece of art for a show.
Now, are these movies?
These are like shows.
Previews for them. Are they most? They're shows. Are they shows?
Yeah, it's black.
Like black experience and stuff like that. Awesome. I'm gonna be honest, man. I have trouble watching a lot of those type of movies and shows because I start getting really upset with people. If you know,
yeah,
what I mean,
you have types to. Of people. Yeah, you have to limit.
When I, it's like I think the last one I was able to sit through was 12 Years a Slave, and by the time that movie was
yeah,
over, I was ready.
And you have to, you know,
it's rough.
I started watching Lena Waithe, The Shy. It's a series on Showtime. You know,
The Shy. Yeah,
I was watching The Shy. I was watching Power. I was watching all other black shows that had this heavy black drama, trauma, blight, and plight. Struggle things, and it really does bring you down. And so you have to be careful with it. And then it's like all the black stuff got to be there. Everything got to be black struggle. We ain't gonna make it.
Now, okay, I got to come back to you. Black AF on Netflix is not like that. You critical of that too?
Yeah, like we can't be critical. I have to be a zombie and not have any thoughts about anything that I intake into my consciousness? Like, what?
I don't know. I guess it's hard because I don't know. I can't put my finger on what
I like Blackish. I like Grownish. I think those are really good black pieces of art. I do. I like those. I think that's other black filmmakers.
Okay, Black AF though, Black AF is not your.
I think I got to the episode. I mean, they're just gonna force this man down our throat. They're gonna force him down our throat.
He did. So wait a minute, you telling me that speech he made in that episode? I mean, he made some good points.
I fell on the side of Kenya Barris, the father. I had the same perspective that he did.
Yeah, like he was literally saying the same
thing.
We just
need to have
right
a
now.
Conversation literally. About what we do and how we can make it better. Black people act like we can't do it. Why? We can't do that.
No, because if we're gonna, but see, that's my point. If we're gonna have that conversation, we need to compare apples to apples. We need to talk about what resources did black people have to do what they're doing versus the
I'm
resources
about with their black folks. With their, look,
I think that's a part of conversation. You can't hold people accountable to the same.
Look, the scene in the episode where he brings together. Ava DuVernay, Lena Waithe, Issa Rae.
That was a
conversation.
Too.
That is creating a dynamic where we all can come together and support each other and have conversations about how we can move forward as a community. That's what I mean. Did you see Tyler Perry in it? Nope. Why? Because he don't want to be in there. He want to do everything on his damn self. And that's okay. But we can also.
You know, it's more and more coming out. You just really don't like.
I just feel like regurgitates the same tired stereotypical tropes of our community, and it's kind of like just like, okay, enough. We know this. My God, like how many more times can we see a black plight story about black women? You know, it's just kind of, but so anyway, it's cool. I mean, you support him. The five that was in the think tank of the episode, and they, we all and.
I don't want you coming back on Tyler Perry when you start coming out with these Oscar worthy dramatic movies.
I support.
You know, don't be coming back over here. So you said you gonna support when it's what you like. We can't just support when it's only what we like.
That's I was with him when he was shooting in the gym. We had every single Chitlin' Circuit play on DVD. Maria Shout at Church. Maria's Big Fat Family. I mean, we had them all. We had them all.
Okay. So you've been down.
I'm critical
within the work.
That means that I have given a lot to invest before I really speak up. I will give it multiple chances and invest my money, my time, and my energy before I start talking bad, especially if it's black folks. And so just know if I'm talking bad, that means that I have really tried to make an effort and I have tried to make it to get an understanding and it's still just not connected with me. It got literally.
That does make me feel better to hear that, though. At least you do give. You don't just give up after the first couple movies, man, my, episodes.
We went to the movies and saw what is the movie Tyler Perry did with Sanaa Lathan?
The one where she got backhanded across the counter at the end of it.
That praying.
The family that prayed. I never forget that backhand.
It was kind of like what, and that's the, I think it was towards the end. What was the white lady's name that played in it? Kathy Bates. Kathy Bates played in it. Her and the black Kathy lady Bates, who played in. Anyway, so they were on this trip across America, and they just randomly stopped by this church and got back. It just seemed like it was just so disconnected and disjointed. And it's like we just want like a story that connects. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not too much to ask,
but it's just kind of, it's kind of like at the end of
it's hard.
Why Did I Get Married? Did you ever see that one?
Yeah, I did. It's been a long time ago. Remind me of the ending. One. Which one? It was two of them, wasn't it?
No, it was the second one. It was the second.
What happened at the end? With Jill Scott? Was that
no,
the one?
No, it was the second one. It was the second.
And then she got slammed.
And they're in the hospital, and Janet Jackson just starts saying, "Fix it, fix it, fix it, fix it." It started grabbing them, making them hold hands. Do you remember that?
I don't really. It's been too long. I think it's been too long. Is that the one? Patty messed up. I guess I
see.
Movies
and it's like,
head,
I want. I just want to tell Tyler Perry, fix it, fix it, fix it. Take your own medicine and fix it.
Oh man. Look at that! Look at that! See, we don't grew up with Tyler Perry. We don't even know.
I wish him peace, blessings, and I hope he lives long and prospers.
Well, we shall see. But all right, man. I'm gonna cut it out, man. It's been a really good conversation. Like I said, this is gonna be my fourth episode. I really appreciate you being here. Hopefully we can do more, man. If there's ever anything you feel like we can talk about or issues that come up, you want to talk about coronavirus or something like that, you know, we can always hop on and do an episode real quick. Or if you're interested in starting your own podcast,
you mentioned the coronavirus.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you knew this, but me and some colleagues have opened our own professional development consulting organization. It's called Dream Launch.
What is it called?
Dream Launch, DREAMLAUNCH. We've been together for about a year now. We really are a minority development, professional development, leadership development company where we work with young minorities and help them in their professional development, their personal development. And so we've been doing a series of launch every Wednesday and Thursday, where we bring together a lot of professionals across disciplines. We've been talking about how COVID has been impacting us in a variety of areas. If you check out our website, dreamlaunch.org, Dreamlaunch LLC are all of our social media tags. Follow us, like us, and you can catch some really good discussions on how we are dealing with this COVID. Last night we had a really good panel with three black psychiatrists, and we were talking about how we are coping with COVID as a community. The week before that, we had people from New York City talking about their experiences. We're going to have a panel of higher education professionals in a couple of weeks. So we're here. We're trying to make some waves. So definitely look us up, dreamlaunch.org.
Awesome, man. I'm definitely going to dreamlaunch.org. That's great. That's good stuff. All right, man. We'll wrap it up at that. And pretty much from here on out, I'll just probably cut out the rest of it. So
we're doing okay. You know, we're remote. We're virtual. Mm-hmm.